porte bonheur. Lady magique et lady chance. Une lady belle, lady du cœur. Être héroïque en cas d'urgence.
Spots on, Miraculous Analysis. I'm Maggie.
And I'm Ava.
And Ava, you know that I have Ladybug for news for you, don't you? Because I already told you the news.
Yeah, you already told me the news, and I told a story about my childhood, and then OBS crashed and we lost the audio.
Yeah. So that's...
round two!
Yeah. That's over now. Those jokes are dead. We need all new content this time around. Well, as you already know, and as I knew you'd be excited about, there is a miraculous shonen manga written by Thomas Estruck with art by Su Shirariku, coming to serialized publication January 28th, by the time this episode airs. That might have already passed. Actually, January 26th. Ah, see? It was so good the first time around. I can't get that spark back.
We peaked in the audio that did not get recorded.
Yeah, it's only coming to Japan, and there are no plans to translate it into French or English so far. It's just in Japanese. It is just a Japanese manga that will be published in Japan in the Shonen Serious magazine.
Yes, and I looked at the... took a meander through some of their... some of their titles. It was, I think, alphabetical, so I don't know if I just, like, didn't see anything because it wasn't in the right letter or whatever, but I did not recognize any of their work. I'm sure they've done something that I would recognize, but they're also a monthly magazine who have done a lot of things.
Yeah.
So and who knows?
Yeah, and I also...
I've only subscribed to Shonen Jump, so I don't know.
Yeah, and we know why. We know it's because of My Hero Academia.
Yeah, we know.
The artist, Shirariku, I had trouble researching them. I couldn't find any of their previous work, but we did see some samples of the manga coming up, and it looks super cute. The art looks great.
Yeah, it looks really, really cute, and, like, not, like, overly cute, though.
Yeah. It's good. It's respectful.
Yeah, it looks good.
We also discussed how, before the official Miraculous Ladybug site update that happened relatively recently, the only website that was providing official Miraculous Ladybug merch was miraculousladybugshop.com. I found that site by accident while trying to look at pictures of Miraculous Ladybug toys, like official toys, but there are no toys on this site. And as you suggested when we were looking at it before, now that I think of it, I'm not sure this is a real site. I'm not sure that this is actually, I mean, it's got the Zag.
It's just a little too unprofessional, you know?
It's got the Zag logo on it, but the products on it are ridiculous. There are no posters, there are no toys, there are no costumes, there nothing anybody in the demographic of people who watch this show would want. It is the strangest cut-and-paste merchandise. You can buy flip-flops and coasters and baby bibs. You can buy bandanas for your dog, and oven mitts, and cell phone cases, but only for Samsungs. And all it is just the Ladybug logo and the Cat Noir logo, and occasionally, like, a picture of Adrian or Marionette standing next to each other, just reused again and again. It's often a little bit off-center. Sometimes the words on this laptop case here, Cat Noir, are a little bit cut off.
Yeah, Cat Noip.
Yes, it's Cat Noip. He's Cat Noip. Hey, hey, make way for Cat Noip. I'm walking you. There's two different kinds of tote bags. They're like $30 each. They have t-shirts, but a lot of t-shirts with the, like, keep calm and blank format on it, which I don't think anybody's actually purchased a shirt with that format on it, like, since maybe 2012.
Yes, like, that sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
Although, like, they seem to be haunting bookstores ever since then.
Yeah,
and, like, there's, like, always a journal section in bookstores, and it'll be like, keep calm and, I don't know, eat bacon. And I'm like, it's 2020.
Yeah.
Well, I guess now it's 2021, which is even worse.
Oh, no. It's a new year.
Do you remember that, when everybody was just obsessed with bacon?
What
was that?
I mean, bacon's is great. It is a good food. Like, it just has to be, like, appreciated. It has to be prepared properly.
Man.
I have a lot of feelings, I guess, about bacon cooking. Because I've been seasoning my bacon lately, and it's paying enormous dividends. Now, we've already thoroughly tore this website apart, and we don't have the energy to do it again. It's already dead.
Yeah, if you would like to see for yourself, the URL is miraculousladybugshop.com. No spaces, no hyphens, nothing. Take a peruse. I would advise you not to buy anything.
Yeah, because I'm not
very good.
And also, I will say that, like, we are venturing on the side of caution here, because this might not be an actual licensed merchandise. This might be a scam here. As I can imagine, because why? It's a magical girl cartoon. Why on earth would you have a website with just, like, men's wallets on it? Like, why? Tote bags? What if we were selling tote bags? I do regret that I think that there's no way that we can naturally resurrect the anecdote that you told in our last recording. About that ended.
Do you want me to tell it? Because I will absolutely tell it again.
I don't actually. I actually just want to revisit the ending of that anecdote, which was the revelation that you were in the top 10% of physically strongest Tatsune Miku fans.
Yes, dude. I'm looking. I'm looking right now. I'm looking at a Miku figure on my. What is that? A dresser? I don't know if that counts as a dresser, but it's. There's a Miku figure on my dresser. If anybody makes fun of Miku, I will fight you. That is essentially a declaration of war against one person, Ava. That is me. I'm physically stronger than most Miku fans, and I will take you down.
Yeah, they don't get to know how we got from this merchandise to that revelation.
No, you don't get to enjoy the journey. You just get to land at the destination.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the destination... Let's go.
We're gamer here. Time.
It's gamer time. It's gamer time, boys. It's gamer time. I'm so psyched for this episode.
I can't get over the name Gamer. Like, why on earth would you name your villain that?
Because that's what he is, Ava. That's what he is.
That's what he is. He's a gamer.
Mm-hmm. This episode aired 15th in France, 27th in the US, and it's one of the episodes where if you go to the official Miraculous Ladybug YouTube channel, like, the first couple of minutes of the episode in storyboard are up for free on the channel for anyone to see. I actually think it's really cool that they do that.
Yeah, I took a quick look at them, and they're really good, too. This show has, like, really good storyboards. Like, like, who are they hiring? Because I want to work with them.
Yeah, well, now you can't, because you made this podcast. You blacklisted yourself.
I've alienated myself from the entire Miraculous cast because of this podcast, and I have to live with that for the rest of my life.
Uh-huh. This particular episode, it's one of the few episodes that there is an exact date for in terms of continuity, since there's a contest happening in this episode, and there's an ad for the contest that reveals that this episode takes place between the 18th and 21st of May. That's also around the same time that the episodes Copycat and Mr. Pigeon take place, so that has nothing to do with airing order. That I guess that's just the actual continuity that they were written in.
Huh. So it's springtime.
Springtime.
I always just kind of assumed it was summer. I don't know why. Maybe because it's, like, always sunny.
They're in school, though, so it wouldn't be summer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man, sometimes my brain just... Oh my god. It's like, oh yeah, it's I live in California, which means that I register all sun as summer because it feels like summer year round. So they must be in summer despite the fact that they're literally in school.
Yeah. To live in California is a perpetual summer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Basically. It's halfway through January and winter has ended. It was hot like 2 days ago.
It's very hot right now in my room. Winter is over. Speaking of their school, do you remember the name of the school that Marionette and Adrian attend?
I don't, but I do know that they mentioned it, and I thought, huh, I don't think I've ever heard the name of this school before.
Well, it's College Francois Dupont. I'm saying, it looks, the way it's written, I feel like it should be pronounced Francois, but it's got the feminine E on the end, so I think it's actually pronounced Francois. I could be getting that wrong. I looked it up phonetically earlier, and I've forgotten everything I learned, but it's College Francois Dupont. Francois Dupont is a character from French literature that I'm gonna tell you about now, because this is actually very cool what they've done here. So Francois Dupont is the civilian identity of the superhero Fantômette. That's a French superhero who was introduced in a series of children's books starting in 1961. Fantômette was the first female superhero in French literature.
That's actually really awesome.
Yes, it is,
like,
and
a really cool little Easter egg.
Uh-huh. It gets better, though, because apparently the story of Fantômette was she was a 12-year-old girl who fought crime in France, and she had two friends, and these two friends were also her sidekicks who fought crime with her, but they didn't know that because they could never recognize her in and out of costume.
So literally just Alia and Nino.
Well, it definitely fits with the theme of the show, which is that, you know, Ladybug and Cat Noir fight crime together, but they can't keep it straight. Keep it together. These books were originally written by Georges Chalais. Dang it. I studied French for so long, and I'm so bad at it. Written by Georges Chalais. This is a guy who died as recently as 2012. And he was still publishing Fantômette, which started in 1961, in 2009.
What?
There are 52 books in the Fantômette series.
Holy shit.
Yes, this was the first French female superhero, and he kept writing this book up until 2009. He, over the course of his life, wrote 150 children's books.
So what you're saying is that this man has written as much... He's like... He wrote at the same pace that Neil Gaiman writes, where it's incomprehensible to anyone who looks at how much work he's completed, and they, like, you can't look at it and think, oh, he has slept ever in his life. All he does is write.
Mm-hmm. He's just one of those people who, like, dedicated himself to children's literature and spent his whole life doing that and kicking ass at it, and he, like, changed the landscape of French literature.
That's awesome. That's a cool little Easter egg. I'm sure it's much more clear to people who are French, because it'd be kind of like making a superhero show here and being like, yes, we attend Peter Parker High School.
Yeah, that'd be great. It's Peter Parker. This episode starts with Marionette journaling. We saw her like making the little box for it to keep her journal safe in a previous episode. And she's just, again, very explicitly journaling about her crime-fighting secrets. Like, she doesn't even, like, shorten the names or anything. Like, full names for everyone involved. Just a real, real thorough written record of all her vigilanteism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which you think would come up later.
Yeah, you would think that it would come up more often than it does.
Yeah.
The storyboards that we have cover the first couple of minutes here. Marionette, in the storyboards, has a little bow in her hair, and I just thought that was cute. It didn't make the final cut, but you can enjoy it on YouTube. Marionette shows up to school late after a long, hard day of just creating incriminating evidence against herself. And she gets to school, and everybody's huddled together in the library, and because they're in the middle of a tournament. They're having this video game tournament to see who's going to get to represent the school in a bigger video game tournament. And Marionette walks in, and I actually... I liked this intro when I first watched the episode when I was, you know, in my younger days. I remember liking it a lot because Marionette actually walks in and she's a little confused about what's happening. And immediately Kim walks up to her and starts explaining everything to her. And she doesn't really ask him a lot of questions. She just kind of quizzical, like, oh, hmm, what, APM? And Max takes that as a cue, not Max, and Kim takes that as a cue to just hop in and explain everything that's happening to her. She doesn't really say she needs someone to explain these things to her, which is important later. Because Max is currently, like, playing Adrian at a video game to see which one of them is going to get the highest score. Like, Max has already beaten everyone else in this tournament, and Kim cannot stop talking about how cool Max is. Kim is hyping
Max
up his friend.
Max and Kim are, like, really good friends. They're, like, always... They're, like, at the zoo together and stuff in another episode.
Yeah, I really appreciate the choice the show made early on, that even though the way these two are designed is very stereotypical, like, oh, he's a jock and this guy's a nerd, they decided early on, and they love each other. They are best friends. They're inseparable.
They are best friends. Mm-hmm. They're, like, basically brothers. They're so close.
Yeah. And Kim won't stop talking to Marionette about, oh, Max is so cool, no one can beat Max, and then he immediately loses to Adrian.
Like, Max turns out that Marionette is a gamer girl.
Yeah, like, Marionette sees that Adrian's gonna qualifies for this contest, and she's like, maybe I can go for this contest. And everybody immediately is, like, very harsh. Everyone's harsh in her vibe immediately. It was like, no, Marionette, no, you can't play video games. You can't do this. Alia, I was surprised, was very unsupportive of Marionette.
You'd think that if Marionette was so into this video game, which, like, there's, I mean, it's not like a montage, but it's, you know, a little three picture slide of her beating her dad and stuff. It's, like, very obviously one of her bigger hobbies. You'd think that Alia would be a little more supportive.
Yeah, Alia seems to think that, like, Marionette doesn't have the right motivations, like, that she shouldn't enter this tournament just to be Adrian's partner and spend time with him. Which
is fair.
Yeah, that is fair, but also, Marionette's super good at this video game.
Yeah, let Marionette onto the esports team, dude. She's really good.
Yeah, once Max loses to Adrian, he's actually very cool about it. He, like, takes a deep breath and is visibly upset about having lost, but is still a very good sport about losing to Adrian, because now they both qualify. But then Marionette gets in at the last second, and they play together. This moment where she sits down with them, Marionette has not mentioned at this point that she plays video games, and Max immediately starts explaining the rules to her, which I appreciated, actually, because it doesn't make any sense that Marionette would enter a video game tournament for a game she had never played before, but this guy assumes that she hasn't. Doesn't make any sense.
I mean, up until this point, we're sort of under the impression that that's what she's doing, though, because they don't reveal that she's into this video game until this moment when she, like, she cuts him off and starts explaining the rules back to him.
Yeah, which
and we're like, oh, wait a minute.
Which actually does make sense. It does actually make sense, though, because she walks into the room and Kim immediately also starts explaining terms to her, but she doesn't ask him to do that. She's just like, oh, is that what's going on? And Kim immediately starts explaining. And I think if you look closely, you can kind of see the look on her face as she is kind of being talked down to the whole time, especially since people seem shocked that she wants to enter.
Yeah.
She, like, very quickly beats Max at this video game because she plays it all the time, usually with her dad. And she, when she wins, she gets up and starts doing this dance. She has a little victory dance, which is in pretty poor taste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not a great sport when she's on the winning end.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing, though, which this is going to come back later. Marionette's victory dance is going to come back later, twice, actually, in plot-relevant
Wait
ways.
A minute, what?
You didn't notice this? I'll point it out when it happens. When Marionette wins, a voice in the Walla says, in a very mocking tone of voice, "The king's been knocked off his throne," which is super mean, and I can't even identify who the voice is. It's not Kim, because Kim would never, but I don't know who it is. It's also not
just
there.
Just somebody from another class who was walking by.
Yeah. In the French audio, the same thing is said, but it's a completely different tone. It's, like, said in disbelief. Mon ami, the king has been knocked off his throne! But in English, they decided that it was bullying. It, also in the storyboard, not so much in the animation, but the storyboard, it's obvious that Kim is the only one not happy that Marionette won.
Yeah. Kim's like, ugh.
Yeah, but because Marionette...
You hurt my friend's feelings! Get ready to pay!
By pay, I mean I'm gonna go
for a run. I'm gonna emotionally support him as he goes through this tough change.
Yeah. Because Marionette and Adrian both beat him, Max actually doesn't qualify for this tournament anymore, even though he beat everyone else. And I actually super like this, because he's clearly a very sensitive kid who's very upset about having lost, but he, like, gets up and is, like, very polite to Marionette, and is just like, well, I'm glad you guys are going, I need to go be alone, and he's very formal about it, and very, like, trying to stay calm, and I really buy this as something that, like, 14 to 16 year old kid would struggle with, because, like, learning to be a gracious loser, especially when it's something that you worked hard on, is a skill mm-hmm. that kids need to work hard to develop, and I think it just felt very grounded here that he, like, is trying his best to be a good sport, but is also struggling.
Yeah. He was, I was impressed with his lack of, like, because usually when things like this happen in the show, there's some sort of violent or angry outburst.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh no, he's just, you know, I mean, he's disappointed, but he accepts it. It's just like, you know, he's been working hard for it. It kind of sucks, which is, you know, what usually happens.
Yeah.
If something you worked hard for doesn't work out, you don't, like, scream at whoever has beat you. You just, like, you're like, oh, well, that sucks.
Yeah, you just go be sad
anyway,
somewhere.
Time to go cry.
Yeah. Yeah. Adrian, like, congratulates Marionette and then invites himself to her house to practice the video game instead of inviting her to his mansion.
Montage of, not even a montage, just a very fast sequence of Marionette and Tiki frantically ripping down all of the photos of Adrian that she has pasted onto her walls.
Yes.
And I'm assuming changing the wallpaper on her desktop, which is a collage of Adrian's face.
Yes, she's got to do a lot of work. And while they're practicing for their tournament, Max is off on his own, and he's very upset. And Hawk Moth says something here. I've written the line down in my notes out of context.
He says,
"I know you like that, my little Akumas," and I get it in context, but I hate it. He says something like, competition. I know you like that, my little Akumas. No, no, they don't like that. Like, they don't like anything.
Say it like that, you know? Said like, oh, something for my Akumas to feed off of or something like that. You didn't have to...
Max is, like, a little bit angry now that he's on his own. He's talking about how, like, how he worked so hard and how he feels like he deserves to win. And I feel like in this moment it's fully acknowledged that, like, the way he feels here is kind of entitled. Since, you know, it wasn't a fluke that Marionette and Adrian beat him. They're both very good at the game. And, like, Marionette, we see her, like, playing this game a lot and practicing. And even though she wasn't training for a tournament, like, she is better at it than
yeah.
But you know, obviously when you're a little kid who's been beaten at a game, it feels bad, and he's vulnerable. It's his entitlement specifically, I think, that makes him vulnerable to Hawk Moth in this moment, and I think that there's an acknowledgement of that, and I like it.
Yeah.
When Max transforms, we get the line that I think is going to win this show an Emmy. Now we'll see who's the greatest gamer in Paris.
Oh my gosh. This, like, this episode is really funny, but, like, I don't think it's funny for the reasons it thinks it's funny. Yeah. Gamer does not mean now what it once did.
Not in all circles.
Ironically, I am right now, recording this in front of my light-up rainbow gamer keyboard and light-up rainbow gamer mouse.
That's right. It's a pretty rad aesthetic to try to apply to a supervillain. I feel like you could have a whole series of gamer villains.
Dude, could you imagine if this had come out in, like, this year, and they just made it, like, his design was just, like, the same as the rainbow keyboards that, like, literally everyone has?
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, constantly shifting color. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, they could you could go the other way with it, too, though. Because you know how that this, I think it's a relatively new movement of, like, the gamer aesthetic, but done in a, like, a soft pastel kind of palette?
Yeah, the pink gamer girls, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like a Penny Snapcube kind of vibe. Penny Snapcube would be a great cartoon villain.
He shows up and he's wearing cat ear headphones, and they're like, Max? Is that you?
Yeah, little cat ear headphones. This aeronautic chair.
I was traumatized because not enough people watched my Twitch stream.
Yeah.
Why aren't you? Why don't you guys want to watch me play League of Legends?
I invested in a new chair that's good for my back.
It was $400, but I used some of my Christmas money on it.
It would be great if Max got akumatized on the reg because trolls kept showing up to his Twitch streams. At what point? And then, of course, Twitch has to, like, ban him because he keeps getting akumatized, which also gets him akumatized.
Akumatized and then not turning off the stream.
Yeah. So it's akumatized.
Oh my gosh.
I wonder how many times in the Miraculous Universe someone has been akumatized live on a Twitch stream.
Live on a Twitch stream on, like, a like live TikTok or something.
Yeah.
They see a hate comment, and then their body is, like, enveloped in that weird blue fog, or purple fog.
I bet people who go onto Twitch streams in the chat with the sole goal of upsetting someone so much they get akumatized. I bet there are compilations on YouTube. Well, Marionette and Adrian are also pro-gamers. And Adrian shows up to Marionette's house and gets to meet her parents, who are very cute. And here's the second time the victory dance comes back. Marionette,
the booyah! Yeah, dad style, booyah!
Yeah! Marionette, when she beats Max, she goes, yeah, Marionette style! She does her little dance, she does a little pose, and it seems so over the top in context of them being two, like, 14-year-olds. Like, wow, Marionette, that's weirdly mean for you. That seems a little out of character. But actually, her dad does that as well. Her dad, who she plays video games with, she's like, what was his name? Like, Thomas? Oh, his name isn't Thomas, is it?
It can't be Thomas.
Hold
can't
on.
Can't be Thomas, dude. Thomas wrote himself into this show as Marionette's dad.
That is a... Ooh, oh no. Marionette. Dad. Marionette dad, come on. Oh, his name's Tom.
Oh, no, Tom.
No, Tom, no. I can't believe that didn't connect with me until right now. But her dad, like, does this this little victory dance, which I get in context of a father-daughter thing is in good taste, but in context of two kids playing video games together would be in poor taste. And it makes sense that Marionette wasn't thinking about it and didn't realize it would hurt Max's feelings.
Yeah, she should have been more considerate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This next scene here, in terms of tone, is wild. Because Max is absorbing the Parisians into his giant floating pyramid to gain power. And they keep cutting back and forth between Max terrorizing Paris and Marionette and Adrian just, like, sitting in her room playing video games. It's like, just... Marionette, like, I guess doesn't have a Google alert set up for unending terror yet.
Yeah, the note that I wrote for this scene was, holy shit, he's been wreaking havoc for, like, an hour, and they're just sitting there playing video games.
Yeah! And because we can't escape him, when they boot up Marionette's computer and they start the game, the opening game screen has a voice cameo from Thomas Estruck.
Oh, was that Thomas's voice?
That's his voice, yes. That is his classiest cameo in the show so far. It goes downhill from here.
Oh, yes. Believe me, I remember the worst one.
We'll get there. A little error in the this scene, Marionette's parents keep popping in to offer Adrian and Marionette snacks. And when Adrian and Marionette look back at her parents, occasionally the pictures of Adrian will appear behind them when they're not looking.
Schrodinger's pictures of Adrian.
Yeah.
They're not real unless you see them.
Yes. this scene is also, like, important, I guess, in terms of quote-unquote fandom, because Marina's parents keep offering Adrian food, and she keeps trying to get them to leave them alone, and so Adrian doesn't get any of the food. He looks so excited whenever the food shows up, and she always takes it away. And this led to the spawn of the hashtag, let Adrian eat 2K16. Do you remember this?
No, I was not part of the fandom when this happened.
Yeah, so this was a...
Oh my god.
This was a grassroots movement to make art and fiction dedicated to Adrian finally getting to eat. And I swear, I know that it feels different in the context of Year of Our Lord 2020, but I swear it wasn't creepy. I swear. It was more about like, oh man, this boy is a model. I bet he doesn't get to eat enough. Like, wait, let's draw him eating croissants. It was perfectly innocent.
I imagine if this happened today, it would not be nearly as innocent, unfortunately.
Yeah, oh no.
That's really funny, though. I thought that you were just going to talk about the fact that this is like a weird, tropey romance scene where it's like, oh no, our hands touched while we tried to reach for the same game controller because we're both gamers.
Oh! Gamer romance! Actually, when they're gaming together, it gets kind of weird, doesn't it? Marionette beats Adrian. It does.
There's like an awkward silence.
But Marionette beats Adrian, and Adrian gets very discouraged very fast and starts self-deprecating hard, like saying, like, oh,
yeah, he's
man,
like, I'm so lame compared to you. And I'm like, dude, you literally have every you were talking Chinese like one episode ago. You speak fluent Chinese and you're 14 and you live in France.
Like... and you live in France! At least you don't live in Southern California like us. But yeah, it left a bad taste in my mouth watching like Adrian get super self-deprecating super fast and Marionette try to be like, oh, what? No, I'm not that good. I am beating you, but I'm not good. It's like, oh man,
yeah,
that's
I find
not cute.
The difference between, because Adrian is so like self-deprecating and like, I wouldn't say like he doesn't have self-esteem, but he gets really, he's like so self-critical. Okay, yeah. He's Cat Noir. He's so cocky.
Yeah.
he's like, yes, I'm the best. I'm so strong. Look at my muscles. I can beat anyone. And then he turns into a little sad boy. He's like, oh, because I'm not that good at video game.
Yeah. Well, I guess I should go back to my fencing and my my piano lessons and my four different languages.
Four different languages, my trillions of extra subjects, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
My modeling job.
My full-time modeling career. I guess it's a little hypocritical of me, because, like, I did say that, like, Max's scene seemed so grounded, but I didn't like this scene. And I do think there's a difference, where it's just Max was clearly, like, very emotional very fast and was trying to act civilized in spite of that. Adrian... This scene almost reads as manipulation on Adrian's part.
Yeah, he's like, he's almost fishing for compliments. He's like, oh, I'm like so bad, don't you think so? Marionette, who I know is very sweet and kind and would never say anything bad about anyone except maybe Chloe.
Even then, it takes a lot.
Yeah.
But in this scene, Marionette gives Adrian something to borrow. She describes herself as lucky. Wink, wink. And she pulls out this literal lucky charm that she has. It's a handmade little charm made of beads. And she hands it to him and tells him to try playing around with it and see if he has better luck. And this becomes a reoccurring object throughout the series.
Does it?
Yeah. Do you not remember the lucky charm?
No.
No, well, we'll get there then.
I don't know. Maybe the brain worms have gotten to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm just losing my memory at an increasingly fast rate.
It's all right. Yeah. Yeah, Adrian forgets to return this charm at the end of the episode, and he still has it, and it reoccurs several times throughout the series. So we will get there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, I can't believe they have an actual, like, reoccurring anything other than, like, the base rules of how the universe works.
Well, I keep forgetting that you're, like, behind in terms of plot, that you haven't seen the later seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was still, like, a
most
month.
Most of the newer seasons that I have seen, I've just seen, like, tiny clips and maybe, like, some, like, extremely short plot synopsis or, like, a single detail of, like, a longer post that ends up on my Tumblr dashboard or something.
Mm-hmm. Marionette and Adrian, just that you're good. Marionette and Adrian decide to pause their gamer sesh because Marionette's mom offers them a salmon and spinach pie, and this is the thing that motivates Adrian to finally speak up about how badly he wants to be fed. The salmon and spinach. I've looked it up. Apparently it's a thing. I bet it's great. But they...
Man, Marionette should really be taking advantage of the fact that her parents are literally bakers.
Yeah.
Like, win him over through food. Isn't that a thing? The way to a man's heart is his stomach? Isn't that, like, a saying that people use?
The way to a man's heart is just to talk to him at all like a person even once. Like, there's nothing in Marionette's way here. Adrian, like... In Adrian's case, though, like, Marionette doesn't need to come up with a pastry-based plan to win him over. Because she can just ask him on a date, which she hasn't done. And we know, of course, that he'd say no because he's in love with a superhero. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, she doesn't need any more advantages. She has kind of everything going for her. She's just not doing it.
Yeah, it's, even if, if he said no, then she would probably just, like, I don't know if she would give up completely, but she would be like, okay, like, it's time to seriously reconsider how mm-hmm. I'm making all of my decisions in life, I guess, because everything revolves around him. And if she knew that he wasn't interested in her because there's some other woman that she doesn't know about, which is technically still her, but whatever, mm-hmm. then everything would probably just work out fine. Because, mm-hmm. like, isn't part of the reason that she doesn't like Cat Noir because she likes Adrian? Like, he'll flirt with her, and she's like, no, there's somebody else.
Yeah.
So it's like, if she gave up on Adrian, everything would be fine. They would probably just get together or something.
I fully expect there to, at some point in the series, be some kind of a one-sided thing. You ever read that book Flipped when you were little?
No.
It was this, like, kind of famous romance novel about these two friends who grew up next to each other. And the girl was so in love with this boy who she grew up with. And once they got to be teenagers, she got over it and he developed a crush on her. So they were flipped. They like, never... It never lined up right. They, like, never both liked each other at the same time. I fully expect something like that to happen. Where, like, Marionette is over Adrian and is now pursuing Cat Noir, who is over her. I fully expect that. But right now, they are in the park enjoying their pie. And did you notice who else is in the park?
I did not.
Well, if you look closely at the wide shot of the park, you can see that hiding behind a lamppost that's near Adrian and Marionette, like, kind of peeking out from behind it, staring at them, is Master Fu.
Really? That's actually really... They're planting things in this episode, huh? They're
yeah.
Like, this one? We're gonna put some stuff in it.
Yeah. It's just one shot, and he's very small. You only know it's him because he's got a very colorful shirt on.
Yeah, his Hawaiian dad shirt.
But they're chilling in the park, and everybody's super calm in this park, as if word has not gotten to them yet that there is a child on a rampage.
Yeah, you'd think that there'd be some sort of emergency system or, like, alert when there's a Akuma attack, you know? Like, there'd be, like, a siren or something that goes off, like a tornado warning, but for magic monsters.
At least it's gotta be trending on Twitter, right?
Yeah. The kids these days are always on their damn phones, and you're telling me they don't even know when a monster is attacking their city?
Yeah. Yeah. While Adrian Marionette are eating pie in the park, Max comes upon them, and he's just in this giant floating gamer pyramid, still absorbing people to gang levels, I guess. And Max, like, calls Marionette by name because he's very mad at her, and she has this line here. how does he know my name? Max? Like, Marionette, other people know you. Like, that's a floating pyramid. You think it's Max just because he knew your name? I guess that is, like, her gamer friends. But I guess all her friends are gamers, kinda, as we learn here today.
Her gamer crew?
Yeah. Can you, and I wonder what that must be like for her to suddenly realize that someone she beat at a video game a couple hours ago was upset enough about it to be a supervillain now. Like, can you imagine, like, you're hanging out with your friends, you, like, make a joke that lands kind of weird, and you're like, oh, sorry, was that too harsh? And your friend's like, no, you're good, man, you're good, and you guys keep laughing. And then, like, later you're, like, getting a boba or something, and a Technicolor version of your friend rolls up and starts shooting you with lasers. It's like, the joke was in poor taste, ha! It's like, man, you could have said something. Communicate with me. Like, have you ever, like, been on social media and saw someone, like, post something passive-aggressive and thought, oh no, is this about me? But then, like, oh no, there's no way this is about me. We barely know each other. Like, oh yeah, I was on an improv team with you 3 years ago. You're probably not big posting about me.
Yeah, they're you would, like, big posting about somebody else who just more recently.
You would... That would never happen in this world. You would never wonder. Because if it is about you, they're gonna be at your window in a couple minutes with weapons.
If it's about you, there is a 50-50 chance they will kill you before Ladybug and Cat Noir apparently realize that anyone is even attacking the city. Because they're too busy playing games.
You'll be brought back to life, but you will die for this. Society would be so different. So much communication. Marionette and Adrian both transform, and they start trying to save people from Max, and Cat Noir does something here. He, like, takes a swing at Max and goes, Cat Noir style, which he learned from Tom, and Ladybug sees this and doesn't react to it, because I actually do think that, no, here's the thing, though, I buy that Marionette
what
thinks this is normal.
What if the give him away?
No. Because Marionette did this thing, like, in front of her class, because she sees her dad do it, and now she's seen someone else do it. She thinks everyone does this. She thinks this is totally normal.
This is normal, yeah. Can I also just to back up for a second?
Yeah.
I want to bring this up, this other thing that Cat Noir did.
Yes, dude.
That made me pause the episode. When they originally, like, Cat Noir transforms before Ladybug. And he saves Marionette from, like, getting shot or something, having something fall on her, whatever. He brings her up to, like, to the roof of a building, or I guess, like, the balcony of a building. And he's like, cool, he's after you, I'll stop him, just stay here and stay safe, etc. And then he jumps off, he jumps off the balcony and says, do a barrel roll. I hadn't thought about this, I think, since the last time I watched this episode, back in, like, 2016 or 2017, and before that, I was literally in elementary school when Do a Barrel Roll was a thing. So who the hell is writing this episode? And why did they think it was okay?
There is a lot of gamer jargon thrown around in this episode. The word game over is spoken upward of 25 times, and We'll get to the things that bothered me the most. I don't know enough about gamer lingo to criticize most of this, but there's a couple things that I heard as like, no, that cannot be right. Absolutely not. Ava, you'll be happy to know. I just went to Google. Do a barrel roll still works.
Oh, does it? When you Google it, it still does a barrel roll?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I love the, I love the sound of your gamer keyboard clacking, like, I must know. Cat Noir and Ladybug are fighting Max, who every time he absorbs more people, he's, like, gaining, like, more parts and more robots from the beat-em-up robot game that Marionette beat him in. And this comes to a head on, I think it's a football field that they're on, where they destroy the giant robot that he's in, and is like, ah, oh, yeah, we did it. And then he says, you forgot one thing, Ladybug and Cat Noir. I saved my last level. And he all of a sudden has access to an even bigger, better robot.
I think they mean, like, it's like a save state. Like when you save before you fight a boss and then you're just, like, about to die and you say, okay, screw it, and you go back to the save that you just did and then you start the fight over with full health and whatever.
Here's the thing, though. In English, Cat Noir sees this and says, oh, no, not the respawn glitch. Which, okay, I'll buy that. He did something that is unique to this video game that his mechanics are based off of. I'll buy that. In French...
Max says something completely different from what Cat Noir says.
Yeah, it's different. But, like, I get that, like, the English version is trying to explain this. Because in French, Cat Noir says, I can't believe it! He did it to us!
Okay.
Yeah, he just says, like, oh, yeah, he did it!
This is, like, gaming... references, but, like, written by someone who doesn't know what video games are.
Yeah. It's like, I got my Tetris here. Oh, I got a game over screen. Oh, no. I'm a gamer.
Katukin was a pretty funny joke, though. Mm-hmm. I gotta say. They do a little Street Fighter battle for, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah, they gain access.
And he says, Katukin! Yeah. That was pretty funny.
They gain access to a giant ladybug robot. Refresh my memory. Did the Lucky Charm give them that?
No, the Lucky Charm gave them spray paint because they spray painted over the window that Max was looking out of.
Where
did the robot come from?
I can't remember. I just watched
it just,
this episode.
Spawned. I don't know.
Just for some reason, like, Max's powers gave it to them. Like, that's the thing, it's like, oh man, dude, your powers are bad if they do that, if they give your enemies weapons. They get in this giant ladybug robot to fight Max one-on-one, is gonna be great. And in, this is so pedantic, but in English, Cat Noir says, I'll man it, you shoot. That's not what man means, they're both manning it if they're both, like, in it and controlling things. Like,
yeah.
In French, he says, I'll drive, you shoot, which makes more sense. They end up switching, though.
Yeah, because apparently, despite being the second best person in his school at this game, Cat Noir doesn't know how to make the character walk.
Yeah, I mean, I bet it's a little different being in an actual giant robot. Uh-huh. It's no problem for Ladybug, though. She's natural. This scene here, where the two robots fight, awesome. But also, the most bad gamer jargon. they're making up names for the different moves they're doing. It's like they throw something called lady bombs, and then someone shoots something called gamer fire. It's like, oh no, absolutely not. And when it becomes clear that they're not winning this fight, Ladybug says to Cat Noir, "We have to beat him harder and jam the system." I'm sorry, you have to what? You have to what now? You have to jam what with what? They end up not beating him harder, though. They end up, like, Ladybug climbs out of the robot and into Max's robot and just physically fights him. Just like...
Yeah, that's the only way to defeat a gamer, dude, is to physically beat him up.
Yes. When was the last time you touched grass, Max? Max gets a game over. He's defeated. He's deakumatized. He says, where am I? Which caught me off guard, because I don't think it's clear exactly how much of what you do you retain when you're not akumatized anymore. Like, it's not clear if you exactly remember what happened.
Yeah. He just, you know, he had a little bit of a heated gamer moment, you know?
Yeah, you know, just like, oh man, I went to a gamer fugue again. they end up beating Max, and then they have to go to the actual gaming tournament, and I'm curious to know how you felt about the ending of this episode.
I was like, okay, cool, I think that it's sweet of Marinette to give up her spot to Max. We didn't get to see any of the actual gaming, though. It was just like, well, Max and Marinette are going to play. Cut to end card of them holding a trophy that is, like, 6 feet tall.
Yeah. They really rolled out all the stops for this gaming tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I first watched this episode as a kid, I was not satisfied with the ending. I felt that it was unfair that Max, you know, got very upset about losing, and then they just decide to give it to him, even though both Marionette and Adrian beat him at the game. Just as an adult, though, I can appreciate now that, like, it's a video game tournament.
Yeah.
It's a contest for a game, and, like, if Max really, really cares about this, and Adrian and Marionette know that they're not as invested, I actually do feel that it's fine if they both decide to just give it to the person who wants it more.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that more as an adult now.
I also, like, it's very obvious that despite being good at video games, like, Marionette isn't going to try and get, like, an esports scholarship or whatever.
Like, no.
Which Max totally would.
It's, like, one of those things where if we're, like, gauging, like, who should play based on how much they would actually benefit from being in the tournament at all, even if they don't win, Max probably has a better shot of going to college because he participated in this esports tournament. Like,
well, I would say Max has a pretty good shot of getting a full ride anyway.
Yeah, he's, like, the smartest character in the entire school.
Yeah, there's much more to Max than gaming.
He's a gamer, but so much more.
Yeah, there's so much more. Adrian, it occurs to me that as, like, a teen model and this very popular kid in Paris, that if he did win a gaming tournament, that might push him over the edge into, like, too cool.
You just, like, cracked this whole thing wide open. This gaming tournament was the only thing standing between Adrian and legitimate worldwide fame.
Yeah. Like, imagine all of the girl gamers sending him their bathwater in the mail.
Oh my god.
Well, the mob of French teens outside of his door. Yeah, I appreciate Adrian's move here of giving his spot over to Marionette, who gave her spot to Max, so there's kind of some juggling of things. Alia is very consistent throughout the episode, just like, I don't care who, just somebody go play! It's so important! Alia is very into school pride, which I guess I get now that I know that their school is named after a pivotal moment in French literature.
Yeah. It's not like, American school pride, where it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh yes, we're just gonna... Oh, we're gonna paint our faces blue? Wait, why are we... Okay, yeah, cool.
What did we do? Nothing? Great. Let's just pick off at Animan.
Yes. One of the stranger villains we've seen so far.
Yeah. I mean, Gamer was great. Gamer was a treasure. Animan, though, Animan aired 17th in US and 16th in French. It begins with, red alert, Nino has a crush on Marionette.
Yeah. The wildest development so far in terms of non-superhero related activity.
Yeah, wild. Though not that wild when you think about it, because this is the fourth guy to have a crush on Marionette. The other three being, of course, Adrian, but though he does not know it. I suppose Cat Noir is more accurate. And then Theo Barbat, the ageless artist who has a million jobs around Paris. And Nathaniel, who got akumatized because of it. And now Nino. So, yeah, Marionette is super popular.
She has so many options. She really should just give up on Adrian.
Well, no, she shouldn't give up on Adrian. She should shoot her shot with Adrian, get turned down, and then
I know,
move on.
But if she's not going to shoot her shot...
I know.
If it's between just obsessing over him and never shooting her shot, and then or just moving on to somebody else, like, don't stay obsessed with him and do nothing, girl. You have to do something or leave.
Well, she does try to move on later, and we know kinda how that goes
Yeah.
We'll get back there. By the way, Nathaniel, I forgot to mention this in the episode where we really talked about him, but the name Nathaniel, he's named after Nathaniel Braun, who's the chief art director of the show, and Jack Kirby, whose family name was Kurtzberg, so he's Nathaniel Kurtzberg.
And I thought that's great. I can't believe I passed up an opportunity to acknowledge Jack Kirby. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to Jack Kirby's ghost.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I always get a little bit wary when characters who are, like, interested in cartoon characters are named after people who work on the show. But...
Yeah, apparently not the only one now that we've connected the Tom. Nino has a really bad crush on Marionette, and actually I really like this interaction, because Nino is talking to his bestie Adrian about how into Marionette he is, and how he can't go talk to her about it. And enlisting his anxieties, he starts with, like, normal stuff, like, oh man, what if she turns me down, you know, what if she laughs, what if she's not interested, and he also says, like, what if she kisses me? Because this guy is listing things. It's like, I, what if things go bad or good? I can't handle either possibility.
I don't know if I would consider someone kissing you as an immediate response to being told that you like them. I don't know if I would consider that a good outcome, because then I would be a little bit off-put.
Oh yeah, dude, what if it turns out Marionette's like a creepy stalker? Nah, man, that couldn't be.
Just not for you, Nino. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, Nino and Marionette have the same style when it comes to having a crush on someone, which is that they freeze up and act like a monster, kinda. Yeah, Nino needs a lot of encouragement from Adrian. And so Adrian encourages him to talk to Marionette, who is with Alia, and all four of them meet outside of the school, and Nino and Marionette, in proper form, just kind of freeze up and can't talk in front of their crushes. In Nino's case, Marionette. In Marionette's case, Adrian. And so they just leave Adrian and Alia, who I'm realizing now are very similar characters, just kind of negotiating, like, almost silent bartering this date that none of them know who's the one actually going on the date. And I actually like this, like, much ado about nothing vibe where everyone's being just vague enough that they're all going on the wrong dates.
Yeah.
I guess you kind of know from the beginning that this isn't going to work out, though, because Nino and Marionette can't be together if they're both like this.
Yeah, if you have two people who are completely unwilling to act on romantic feelings at all, then nothing is going to happen.
Yeah. They both need someone like Adrian and Alia. Which, I mean, come on. Why can't Nino and Adrian just date and then Marionette and Alia and none of this superhero business? That would be great.
Ideal situation.
We've already got the perfect people for each other. Now we have the superhero drama.
I don't know how, I guess, popular Suze are as a first date location in France, but it's kind of a weird choice here in America, I would say. Unless, I guess, you live really close to a zoo.
I might have agreed with you previously, but, like, I've been locked inside for coming on 10, maybe 11 months now. I would so love to go to a zoo. A zoo sounds awesome.
Oh my god.
Usually zoos make me kind of sad, but like...
Do you know how badly I want to go to an aquarium? Holy shit. I have never wanted to just stand there and look at fish so bad in my entire life.
You know what's weird? I actually think I would understand aquarium for first date more than zoo. That seems better to me, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a little more quiet. I always prefer aquariums over zoos because, well, A, I like fish. Like, I almost became a marine biologist as, like, my job. But I also just like the environment better because you're supposed to be, like, a little bit quieter. You're not in the sun all the time. It's, like, a mainly indoor activity where you just kind of walk around and the lighting is really nice. It's, like, it's far more romantic than, like, zoos, which are typically, like, they have some sort of weird safari gimmick going on. Like, it's more marketed towards kids, but aquariums are usually, like, pretty universally loved, I guess.
Yeah. And they're not as much of a downer, you know? Like, maybe the fish are sad, but if they are, they're sad very briefly, and then they forget.
Yes,
is that,
exactly.
Is that true? Is that how fish work, or are fish actually smarter than I've been led to believe?
They're definitely smart fish, but I don't know which ones they are.
Oh, good. So we'll live in ignorance. Yeah. But they're gonna go to the zoo, they're gonna see a great new panther installation. Now, Alia and Adrian, who, again, are very similar, and, like, there needs to be an episode eventually dedicated to Alia and Adrian, like, teaming up to do something together, and, like, gushing about Ladybug together.
Please, oh my god. Dude, I need you to be on the writer's team of this show.
Oh, excellent. I'll bring you along. They both come up with the same idea to Cyrano de Bergerac, their friends, using headset pieces. Wildly elaborate plan coming from both these 14-year-olds.
Yeah, who apparently just have access to Bluetooth headsets, which is something if you ask me where to get one, my first guess would be Best Buy, and then after that, I would probably say, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But you just gotta go online, you gotta hop online, we got overnight shipping.
Yeah.
Adrian sends Nino in, and is coaching him, and then Alia sends Marionette in and is coaching her, but Marionette thinks she's on a date with Adrian, not Nino, and so, like, Nino shows up, like, where's Adrian, and then Nino gets so panicked he says he'll wait for Adrian, who isn't coming, and they're both just sitting there. Also, Max and Kim are both at this zoo together. They're there to see the new panther, and their story is, it was such a relief to be drawn away from the drama of Nino and Marionette both just refusing to communicate, and over to what's up with Max and Kim.
Yeah, it's so funny because Max is just standing there as, like, the main, I guess, conflict for the villain happens, which is Kim walking up to the new panther exhibit, who, hey, by the way, why is the zookeeper just, like, hanging out with the panther? Like, listen, zookeepers, you know, they take care of animals. Animals, you know, definitely trust zookeepers more than normal people. It's still a wild animal. Like, if he turns his back to the panther, he is going to die. he's like 2 feet away from it, feeding it by hand, basically. Like, what is this man doing?
Okay, interesting you should say that, Ava, because this brings me to something I discovered on the Miraculous Ladybug Wiki, which is this episode has a whole section on the wiki dedicated to inaccuracies when it comes to animals.
Oh my god.
People have written every single thing that this episode got wrong, including things like, oh, like, he says that the panther's gonna eat him, but actually panthers are very docile, blah blah blah. And, like, things like, in this episode the panther's animated with black fur, but actually panthers have very dark brown fur that's kind of uneven in places. Like, dude. I felt reading this
doing
wiki,
our job for us.
Yeah, I definitely had a moment of, like, feeling, having myself reflected back at me in this wiki and being like, oh, well, in the French translation, actually, he doesn't say that he's man, he just says he's driving. Like, oh my god, Maggie, nobody cares. Also, no one cares about the color of the panther's fur.
Oh my god. Well, I care.
Oh, good.
I care about this man's reckless zookeeping behavior.
Yeah, there's a zoology podcast out there somewhere where all these people are happy. But yeah, I guess apparently panthers, like, don't eat people, or, like, they wouldn't. Or at least, actually, a panther's my best friend. He would never hurt me. Like, dude, no.
Yeah. But the zookeeper is the villain this episode, and he's akumatized because Kim is, like, he goes up to the panther. I forget, like, what he says initially, but he's basically like, oh, this is dumb. I hate this panther. This panther's so stupid. I could probably beat it in a race. And the man's like, yeah. No, you couldn't. It's a panther. And he's like, shut up, old man. I could totally beat him in the race because I won our local track meet.
Yes.
And Max is like, dude, back off. And they just walk away. And the man is so filled with hatred for this local, like, dick track team star that he becomes a super villain.
13-year-old calls his panther slow, and something in him breaks.
Oh my god, I just love that Kim's explanation is like, yeah, I beat every human being that signed up for our local track tournament. I can totally outrun a wild animal.
I mean, Kim ran as fast as Alex did in Rollerblades, so if he, okay, like, pounded some monster energy...
This man is much faster than a normal human being.
If Kim had access to cocaine, I think he could do it.
If Kim had access to cocaine, we would never see him again, because he'd be moving at the speed of light.
Remember how I said that, like, Max's akumatization in the last episode felt very grounded and in character and realistic for his age?
Yeah.
This is the polar opposite of that. This is the antithesis to that.
This, like, 50-year-old man got akumatized for something that only a 3-year-old would stay mad over for more than, like, 2 seconds.
I will, in all fairness, I do want to say that, like, when you're an adult, sometimes you just have to let middle schoolers bully you, and you're not allowed to be upset about it because you're the adult, and that does suck. I still think about mean things teens have said to me. I worked at a haunted house once where teens would come through, and, like, you'd think you'd be immune because, like, you're wearing monster makeup. Like, what are they gonna say about me? They can't even see me. But, like, if you're wearing monster makeup, they'll, like, find the thing about you that's real. Like, this is a fake face, but that's my real human body you're insulting right now. And, oh, you just right over your head. Wow, no empathy. There's nothing in your eyes. Just kids would just come through and say the meanest things you had ever heard. Like, every job I've ever had where, like, there are middle schoolers around, they'll say, like, the cruelest things that you could ever conceive of, and you just have to stand there like, I see.
You're like, I'm the adult in this situation. You're, like, clenching your fists. I'm the adult in this situation. I'm the adult in this situation.
Yeah. It's like, so I understand him being, like, upset that he, well, actually, I guess he wasn't bullied. The panther was. And he's just so empathetic,
like,
to his panther.
Yeah, he's, like, white-knighting the panther. Like,
yeah.
And the panther seems to understand English. Like, the panther gets upset by the bullying.
The
which
panther.
Is a very wild precedent to set in this universe.
I taught this panther English. So it could be bullied.
Guys, magic is real, and also, it's exactly like modern society, except, animals understand English now.
Yeah.
So, watch out.
Yeah. That's not the largest change between our world and the miraculous world,
yeah.
I don't think. Back over with Nino and Marionette. Nino takes Adrian's coaching and starts to tell Marionette, oh, I maybe have a crush on someone. And he, at the last second, panics and blurts out that it's Alia, so he doesn't have to admit that it's Marionette. And I'm not sure how much sense that makes. Like, the idea that...
It doesn't make any sense.
No, the idea that you would blurt out, like, it's less embarrassing for me to say I have a crush on someone else, right? Right? Is it, though? Is it less embarrassing? Is admitting to a crush you don't have, does that feel better than just saying, telling
it's
the,
like,
truth?
I understand the sort of panicked mind state that might put you in.
Yeah.
But, like, if I was confessing to someone and I was like, okay, I'm gonna do it, and then I say, actually, no, like, back up, pull the brakes, I'm just gonna, like, invent someone, like, oh, it's someone I met on Discord or something. Like, somebody they don't know. Not their best friend, who they spend all of their free time with.
Yeah. It's like the person who's closest to Marionette,
yeah,
is the subject of this lie. Alia can hear them and is very vocal about how she does not want to date Nino. She's not interested in him at all, but Marionette just kind of goes along setting up another fake date with the wrong person.
Yeah.
It keeps happening.
Marionette is, like, a horrible, horrible friend in this situation. Because it's not even like, oh, I'm gonna promise him a date and, like, if she says no, then I'll, like, think of an excuse or something. It's Alia in her ear screaming, do not set me up on a date with Nino. I do not like Nino. I don't want to go on a date with Nino. Don't do this to me. And Marinette ignoring her completely and saying, yes, Nino, go on a date with Alia. Marinette.
Yeah.
You can't be this bad of a person, can you?
Like, I don't get why she's doing that, because she's not in the same position. She doesn't think Adrian is
around. There's no motivation. She's just being an asshole.
Well, we'll come back to that later, because I think she acknowledges her wrongdoing a little later in the episode. But yeah. this crime she's committing here gets cut off, because, oh no, what's happening? There are wild animals loose in the park, because our akuma-sized villain here has been turned into someone who can shapeshift into different animals, and he's releasing the animals in the zoo as a distraction. Or because they're his friends? It's not clear. I think maybe it's just because he loves them. I don't know. He releases them for some reason. Ladybug shows up to fight this guy, and it's interesting here. Actually, she says, this guy sets her up something about animals, blah, blah, blah. And she shows up and says, well, what do you think about ladybugs? But she uses the French word for ladybug. It's actually rare in the show that they will use the French word for ladybug, which I believe is coquelle, coquette.
They were just like, just this once.
Yeah, just this once, yeah. Usually they use the English word for it. But in this episode, they don't. This guy, though, let's talk about steaks vis-a-vis akumatized villains.
Animan. Our furry villain.
Our furry villain, antagonist. Yes. Can't believe we're this far in. This is the first time we've mentioned furries. This guy, though, he says out loud, he's transformed into a panther, and he escapes Ladybug and Cat Noir by distracting them with other animals, and he's cornering Kim on this bridge, and he says that he's going to eat him?
That's like, you're still a person.
Yes, he's
this
still
is like the
person.
Same, this is cannibalism, what he's describing. You being a panther doesn't make it okay.
I mean, let's talk about my bar for akumatized villain's motivation. It starts at Bubbler with Nino going, like, I just want to throw my best friend a party. And then up at the top is, like, the New York special where Hawk Moth decided to declare nuclear war. And then somewhere, like, closer to Hawk Moth is this guy who wants to eat one child. For being
He's
kind
like,
of
I
a jerk.
I can't let my panther eat you, so I'll do it myself.
Yeah, you just, you think you're faster than my panther? This is just cause, little boy. Gonna kill you now. God. Cat Noir, like, after he saves Kim, gives him to the only trustworthy parents in Paris, Marionette's parents. And there's a part here where, like, I can't remember what set it up, but Ladybug, like, gives Cat Noir a little scratch under the chin. That is not a cat. That is an adolescent boy.
That's a human being, Marinette. What are you doing?
That's a little scratch under the chin.
Like, I don't see a teenager wearing those, like, decorative cat ears at the mall and think, I should go up to her and give her little scritches. Like, that is not my impulse. My impulse is to continue about my day like a normal person.
Do you have any friends who you're close enough to who, if they did put on cat ears, you would, like, without asking first, give them a little scratch?
Well, it depends. Depends okay. on a lot of things.
What are the things?
I don't know. I'm like, okay. I'm sure that there is definitely at least one situation in which I would, but mm-hmm. I can't imagine it. Also, hey, speaking of cat ears, why do the, like, Cat Noir is wearing, like, fake cat ears,
mm-hmm.
but in this episode, he, like, hears something and they twitch. So do the fake, like, felt or and or leather cat ears actually enhance his hearing?
I don't think that ever comes up. I thought they were purely decorative. It would make sense if they had a purpose.
It's really weird, because I made a note about this because I was so confused. I'm like, wait a minute, did his fake fabric ears just twitch at like, a sound?
Interesting. Cat, it doesn't really come up, you know, that Cat Noir is, like, Cat Noir doesn't, like, try to join the pack or anything.
Yeah, he's apparently the closest to an animal of any of the... any of the human characters based on the scritches and the strangely useful decorative cat ears.
I never thought about this before, but Marionette's costume doesn't come with like fake wings or antenna or anything. A lot of Cat Noir's costume is aesthetic.
Yeah.
It's a lot of accessories. Kim is more or less safe now because he's with Marionette's parents, and, you know, if I was in trouble in Paris, I would run to the nearest bakery.
As one does.
Yes. And there's a couple scenes here where they're trying to trap this shapeshifter in various objects, like, to trap in a box as a mouse and stuff. There's a part here where they trap him in a bus, and he starts turning into lots of different animals to try to break out. According to the wiki, the bear should have been able to break out, because apparently bears are stronger than buses.
Oh, yeah. Bear... Dude, there was one time when I was living up in, like, a more mountainous area, and there was, mm-hmm. like, a few bears that would come around every season. Mm-hmm. Bears are huge, as someone who has been, like, within 15 feet of one, just, like, in a stare down as I was taking the trash out one night. They're huge, and they can totally break through glass if they want to. I'm pretty sure that the weight of, like, if that bear just put his weight on the door alone, it would probably force it open and break the mechanism keeping it closed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that if I really tried, I could pry open a bus door with, like, little to no issues. I could break the mechanism that is holding the door closed. Never mind the bear.
Yeah, you can get out of those things in case of an emergency. I once was exiting a public bus, and the bus driver didn't quite see me, and he closed the door on me while I was still in it. And it just kind of bounced off of me, and it didn't hurt, really, because they're very well padded. They're clearly designed with that in mind. It stunned emotionally. It was very embarrassing to have the bus door, like, it had to be crushed in the bus door while everybody watched. But it did not hurt. So, yeah, you can just get out of them bus doors. That's easy. But in this case, instead of breaking out through the bus doors, he decides to turn into a T-Rex.
Yeah, I just want to bring up, do they not have, like, the the safety training that, like, every single American school, like, class has to go through when you go anywhere on a bus, where they give you that spiel in the beginning and they reiterate, like, 20 times that there is a brightly colored labeled lever at the front of the bus that will automatically open all of the doors and, like, slow the bus down in case of emergency. Because they, they were, like, trying to open the door, and they were, like, pressing all these buttons, like, how do I open the door? And I'm like, man, these people never got the brightly colored lever talk that we all had to sit through 2 trillion times as kids.
Yeah. Also, like, he looks like an animal, but he is still a man. He is a person. He doesn't need to cut the, oh, what animal can get me out of this? You can get out of this as a man. You can go to the emergency exit, dude. But instead he turns into a T-Rex. Mm-hmm. Marionette pulls out her lucky charm, does some nonsense, gets eaten, dies. The show is over. They win an Emmy.
Oh, if only. No, she uses a carjack, which I appreciate that because this is a kid's show and they realize that kids probably don't know what a carjack is. There is a scene earlier on where a man is shown using a carjack before the Lucky Charm appears.
Okay, I didn't notice that, but I appreciate it.
So they could establish for kids what a carjack does.
Mm-hmm.
Lets herself get eaten and then pries open the T-Rex's mouth with the carjack.
Mm-hmm.
which is an extremely dangerous plan.
Yeah, gutsy. Cat Noir, she doesn't indicate that this is her plan at all to Cat Noir. He thinks she's dead. He's about to enact vengeance.
When she is presumed dead, he literally is, like, about to kill this man. He's like, you're gonna pay for what you've done. I'm like, whoa, dude, calm down. She's still alive. This is a children's show.
We're getting closer and closer to Cat Noir murdering a human Noir's being.
Inevitable murder.
Yeah. But they end up defeating this guy, and man, if there's a support group out there for people who get akumatized, this guy's gonna have to tell the story of, like, oh, what did it for you? You know, what was your trigger? He's gonna say, well, a 13-year-old said something kinda mean about my cat. And that was all it took. And I went on a rampage and tried to kill that boy.
I mean, it's more justified than the thousands of times that Mr. Pigeon has been akumatized.
Yeah. I bet Mr. Pigeon runs the support group, so, you know, no one talks shit about it. Oh, man, I left out the really important part where Ladybug, like, throws Alia and Nino in a cage together at the zoo and leaves them there for the whole episode.
Yeah, and they're just there.
They're just there the whole episode. I think they eventually get out, like, the Lucky Charm frees them, because Ladybug doesn't go back for them. Like, Marionette and Alia, like, hook up afterwards. Like, Alia's coming out of the bakery, I think.
Yeah, didn't she say that she, like, forgot about Alia?
Yeah, she, like, she sees Alia's like, ah, oh, you, that's right. They're fine, though. Like, and as we learn, while Nino now they're more than fine. Nino and Alia, the time they got locked in a cage together under fear of death, they bonded, and they learned, oh, they have a lot in common. Actually, which is not true. They are very different people.
Very different people with very similar plights of never knowing where the hell their best friend is in times of crisis.
Yeah, they do have that in common, I guess. And since we've been talking about, you know, how people acting as foils, I guess they do kind of work together, in that Nino is very enthusiastic but tends to freeze up, and Ollie is very practical and driven, and that maybe they do complement each other well. When I was, like, a kid, I didn't love so much that, like, they ended up together. It seems too, like, neat that now they're dating, and, like, I don't know how much I bought, like, we locked them in a cage, and that was all it took. Like, I didn't think I liked that it was, like, they were under duress.
It's, like, one of those things where it's, like, it feels almost unnecessary that this, like, development is happening.
Yeah, I wasn't really on board for Nino and Alia at first. That changed. Later in the series, they, as a couple, act as a pretty good foil for the relationship between Adrian and Marionette. And they also do become just kind of a cool couple in general. There's a couple moments later on that I'm actually looking forward to, especially, you know, once the superhero team expands a bit. It's kind of a neat dynamic. There isn't a lot done with it early on, though. It's just, now they're into each other. Now they're into each other.
They are a really cool superhero couple, though.
Yeah.
I gotta say.
I wonder if Ladybug ever considers using her power of matchmaking again. Because apparently you can lock two people in a cage together. Two people who previously viewed each other as near siblings. And at the end of that hour, they will be into each other.
Yeah, that's quite the relationship change. That's like nearly incomprehensible. Over the course of, I'm assuming, like, an hour.
Like, well, it might have been longer than that, since Ladybug did forget to free them, so who knows how long it was until someone found them. Maybe it was the fear of death that pushed them together. It's like, Nino, we're running out of food. What are we gonna do? I guess this also comes back later in the New York special. Nino and Alia both seem to think it's perfectly okay for someone to try to, like, force Marionette and Adrian into a dangerous situation where they're trapped, and then that'll make them start dating.
Yeah. They're like, oh, this is our meet cute.
Yeah.
And it worked out great.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-Bug.
Mm. Yep.
I really like Anti-Bug. I honestly really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was, like, structured a lot better. I thought that made Chloe's intentions and actions a little bit more believable, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It made me sympathize with Sabrina even more.
Excuse me. We did not need to sympathize with Sabrina more. But, yeah, I also really dig the break from structure here. They changed it up. This episode was 17th in France, 25th in the U.S. It starts after someone's already been akumatized. Like, Chloe is, like, in her room, and something invisible is harassing her. And it's harassing her at school, too, and it's embarrassing her in front of people. And you don't know immediately what's happening, because you haven't seen anyone get akumatized. And, yeah, it's pretty clear from, like, the silhouette and the voice work that it's Sabrina, just invisible. But I actually like that they mixed things up a little bit here.
Yeah, it's a nice break from form. And I also like that we sort of find out why she was akumatized as the episode goes on.
Yes, non-linear storytelling.
From a butler question mark that is, I guess, routinely forced to entertain Chloe's fantasies of cosplaying as Ladybug and then running around the hotel as if she was fighting crime.
Yes, this character comes back later in a more pivotal way. You don't remember future episodes with the butler character?
I do not remember this guy.
Yes, well, he returns. But before they interview the butler, Ladybug and Cat Noir show up to Chloe's place. I think she lives in the hotel that her dad owns. And yeah. they show up and are interviewing her and trying to figure out who's harassing her. And the way the mayor acts in this scene, I feel, really informs Chloe's character. Specifically, there's a line here where he talks about how this invisible thing has, like, destroyed some of Chloe's clothes, and talks about how, like, he needs to go get designers to make her new clothes immediately because, oh, well, she can't be seen wearing, like, department store clothes. That would be embarrassing. And he uses the word embarrassing. He specifically talks about how his daughter's appearance, if it is not quote-unquote classy enough, is going to reflect badly on him. And it just really, lets you know what Chloe's deal is, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is a case of nurture, not nature. She has been raised by a father who is obsessed with her making him look good, and a mother who never feels as though she can live up to her expectations. Yeah. So that is a recipe for absolute disaster. Holy shit.
And he's the mayor of Paris, her dad. And as we know, he does not carry on the most ethically clean campaign. Like, yeah. He maintained power by, like, smearing people. To Chloe's dad, like, status equals popularity, popularity equals power. And that's exactly how Chloe acts. Like, she wants to maintain her status as somebody who's been born into wealth. And she thinks that gains her popularity. She thinks that popularity is power over people. Like, it just kind of explained how Chloe maintains this image of herself as a good person that people like, even though she's not particularly popular among her classmates, because she doesn't see popularity as people liking you. She sees it as having power over people.
Especially, because we know that she looks up to her mom a lot, and even if she doesn't really share that sort of respect for her dad, she has an understanding that he is someone of importance in Paris. Like, he's literally the mayor. He's, like, one of the top, you know, most visible government officials.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she understands that manipulating people works, and they taught her to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that. So this is important, because when Ladybug asks Chloe if there's a possibility anyone could be mad at her, she says no. She thinks that everyone likes her, and even though she's, like, not mentioning that she had a fight with Sabrina recently, which is clearly a little dishonest, I totally buy that she doesn't think that's important. I totally buy that the way she perceives herself, she genuinely doesn't think that people would want to hurt her, and she thinks that she's generally well-liked.
Yeah, she's under the impression that Sabrina doesn't actually dislike her at all, or isn't, like, genuinely hurt, I guess. She just thinks that this is, like, a normal emotional transaction that allows her to have some sort of power over her friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, when Ladybug and Cat Noir finally ask her butler, like, what's going on, I feel bad just calling him the butler, but I cannot remember his name.
I don't think that we learned it in this episode.
No. We get a little flashback to Chloe very much being a child, which I actually appreciate. She's like 13, 14, maybe 15 tops. And Sabrina are dressed as Ladybug and Cat Noir, and they're running around the hotel, and the butler's pretending to be the villain, and it's a great little game they're playing. And they run into this hotel bar where you can, if you look closely, you can see sitting at the bar, who's that?
Who's in the background?
Master Fu.
Wait, why is he watching Chloe? Did he think that Chloe was Ladybug?
Ladybug and Cat Noir are not here at this hotel, so it's possible he's just having a drink.
He's just having a drink. He's on his off day, you know.
Yeah.
He's, like, having a drink, and he looks over, he's like, oh my god, is that Ladybug?
Yeah. Chloe and Marionette really do look alike. They keep driving that home. The only difference, really, is the color of their hair. But she accidentally walks into this TV interview with Jagged Stone, a rock star who Chloe has met before, but who doesn't recognize her, and thinks that she is Ladybug, the real one. And so Chloe, who has a complicated relationship with power and visibility and honesty, and is 14, is like, okay, and goes along with it, and pretends to be Ladybug for this TV interview. But Sabrina, who has a less complicated relationship to the truth, barges in and, you know, continues with the game that they're playing and outs her as not really being Ladybug, just being someone in a costume, and embarrasses her on TV, which I understand for someone Chloe's age in Chloe's position must be devastating, because apparently her dad cares an awful lot about her being perceived as embarrassing. And Chloe reacts so horribly. She, like, the next day Sabrina shows up and she gives Sabrina the silent treatment. She does this very, I think, realistic, like, passive-aggressive thing where she pretends Sabrina's not there. Oh, I don't see Sabrina. There is no Sabrina. So if there's someone there, they must be invisible because I don't see anyone. Which is, I don't want to get into it that much, but I've seen middle schoolers do things almost exactly like this.
This is a very middle school thing to do, yeah.
It is. Middle schoolers hold all their power in the form of passive aggression. It's all they have, and they use it mercilessly. And that's how Sabrina gets akumatized, because Chloe's just so mean to her, just takes it a bridge too far, and turns her invisible. And Sabrina decides to terrorize Chloe. And Ladybug throws some glitter onto Sabrina once Sabrina tries stealing their miraculouses. And she covers her in glitter so they can see her now. And Sabrina takes, like, a fighting stance and says, that doesn't mean you've beaten me. I can still beat you.
Yeah, she says, just because you can see me doesn't mean you can beat me. And I'm like, isn't your only superpower that you can't, that they can't see you?
But yeah, Sabrina, it kind of does mean that. They still have superpowers, and you're just a person now. But she does an okay job, I guess, fighting them. I guess Sabrina knows martial arts now. Chloe sees all this happening on the cameras that she has access to all over this private hotel. That's not good. But she watches this happening, puts on her Ladybug costume, and goes to try to help. Which, yeah, I get it. That's how she sees herself. She sees herself as a hero. She doesn't get how she could make this situation bad. And she does make the situation bad immediately. She messes up. She, like, distracts Ladybug and gets in the way. And Ladybug does, I guess, just what she always does in this situation. She picks up the civilian and just kind of traps her in a closet. It's exactly what she did last episode with Nina and Alia. Chloe tries to explain to Ladybug that the Akuma is probably in Sabrina's pin, a pin that Chloe gave to her. And Marionette doesn't listen to her, just, like, slams the door on her. and she guesses wrong where the Akuma is on Sabrina.
It's a very strange sequence because they sort of frame it as though Ladybug, it's weird because there's like two sizes. It's framed as though Ladybug is completely in the wrong for not listening to Chloe. And Marinette's like, listen, she has lied to us. She is like, she's just here to get like attention. Like, we've dealt with her before and she has brought us nothing but trouble. I don't really see a reason why I would believe her when she was telling me something if this is not, I don't know if it's a life or death situation, but it's a dangerous situation and people are in harm's way.
Mm.
But, like, also, she did give you a specific, like, you know that it's about their relationship and it is a keepsake that Chloe is saying, I gave this to her as her friend and it is very important to our relationship. So it's like, well, Marinette is kind of in the right for not listening to her, but specifically not in this one instance where it is extremely helpful, like, obviously helpful information. like, yeah, like, maybe don't trust her all the time, but on this one thing, yeah.
Maybe, I guess, but then you have to, like, go along with the idea that the object that gets akumatized is thematically related to the trauma. And I don't know how meta you can get with that, because, like, are we going to subscribe to that, that it has to be thematically important? Because how are Ladybug and Cat Noir supposed to parse that? Is the thing is, like, this is the only time, this is the only episode that has aired so far, when this was first airing, where Ladybug has guessed this wrong. Chloe is offering a solution to something that, up until this point, was not a problem. But it's a big problem in this episode.
Yeah, it's a big mistake that is fixed extremely quickly.
Yeah.
She realizes she's wrong, and then almost immediately, like, she just, like, grabs it off, grabs the pin, and destroys it. And she's like, oh, I guess Chloe's right. It's like, oh, so there weren't really any consequences to this?
Yeah, it was like a 2-second delay. Who cares? And then what ends up happening is once they've defeated Sabrina, Chloe goes back to spying on Ladybug and Cat Noir via cameras and overhears a conversation about her. Because Cat Noir asks Ladybug why she didn't listen to Chloe. Honestly, I don't think it would have made a lot of sense to listen to Chloe. I mean, in the heat of the moment, whatever object you can grab, like, the first thing you think is the Akuma is always the Akuma up to this point. Has never happened before. Ladybug says, well, why would I listen to her? She lied to us up to that point. She lied about the fight with Sabrina. Like, I'm not gonna listen to her. I don't trust her. Which isn't that unreasonable. But also, I get the point they're making about how Ladybug is Marionette, and Marionette doesn't like Chloe, and she's acting a little bit with prejudice here in a potentially
but
dangerous
it is,
situation.
Like, also a boy who cried wolf situation. Like, Chloe lies about shit constantly. She literally, the reason she got into this situation was because she was lying about being Ladybug. Like,
yes. Yes.
She is a liar.
It is what they want from us. I get that Chloe doesn't see herself that way, though. She doesn't think she lied to Ladybug, though. She thinks that she just acted with her own best interests, and, like, she was right about the Akuma, and she feels like she should be validated for that. And she is a kid, and she heard somebody who she really admires, like, say something kind of mean about her. And I get how she reacts here.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's, especially when it's someone that she idolizes so much.
Yeah, what if the writer of My Hero Academia tweeted that he found this podcast and hated it?
Oh my god, I would absolutely die.
You would become a supervillain.
He's like, especially since it's like he's like one of my favorite artists ever, but he also is like into the same stuff as me. Like, we have like the exact same interests in terms of like the like series that he said he's enjoyed and stuff. I'm like, oh my god, like, this is why I like your series so much, is because we have the exact same set of interests. So if he said that he disliked stuff that I was making, I would probably just crawl into a hole and die.
That's kind of what Chloe does. She gets akumatized very fast. Marinette is about to run out of time, though, on her Miraculous, so she has to go rest somewhere for a bit. And Cat Noir tries to fight Chloe on his own and gets kidnapped immediately. He gets tied up and is like, oh no, oh no, Ladybug, I couldn't handle this by myself. I need you to come save me.
And she's, like, fucking with him. Like, she's, she's like, he's on his own, like, extendable bar tied up, and she's, like, shifting her weight on the end that is, like, attached to the balcony so that he's, like bouncing up and down, like, 3-4 stories up in the sky, like, forced to watch as, like, he's like, oh yeah, I could die at any time because I'm tied up. Like, she's just, like, messing with him and, like, taunting him to try and get Ladybug to come faster.
Marinette saves Cat Noir by utilizing the power of a low-quality MP3. She plays the grainiest recording of her voice from that interview a minute ago. This is to lure Chloe away. It's like, it was not the best audiophile listening to it. But it does give her the opportunity she needs to untie Cat Noir, who doesn't see her out of costume.
Yeah, it's, I kind of wish that there was more stuff like this, where it was, like, Marinette taking initiative instead of just Ladybug.
Well, Marinette taking initiative has its own problems, such as something that didn't come up really as a conflict, but that I thought for a second would, which is the fact that Marinette has to leave her cell phone where she wants Chloe to go, and Chloe picks up Marionette's unlocked cell phone, which she doesn't recognize as Marionette's. Okay, maybe she wouldn't. That's fine. But it did scare me for a second. Like, oh no, oh no, 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 Chloe has her phone. She could, like, do such evil things with that.
If I was a supervillain and someone left their phone as, like, bait, I'd be like, oh, well, I'm gonna find out whose phone this is. Like, immediately, if it's unlocked, are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, it feels like, hold on, Hawk Moth, I know you've given me superpowers, but I think I have found a greater power.
Technology.
There's this theme throughout the episode about taking advice. Tiki gives her advice, and she has to take it, and then later, like, Cat Noir is like, hey, I think I know where the Akuma is, and Marinette's like, yeah, well, I'm gonna take your advice, because I've learned my lesson, but this is not a problem she has ever had. She doesn't need to learn this lesson.
Like, even her, because it kind of comes off as like, oh, I don't trust people in general. It's like, no, you just don't trust Chloe because she's proven herself distrustful. You trust Cat Noir.
Yeah, it's kind of like, don't take criticism from someone you wouldn't take advice from.
Yeah.
But, and also, specifically, this is the only episode where there's any kind of issue at identifying where the Akuma is. It's the only one. This is not a problem that she has.
It's a one-time thing. She's like, oh, I guess it was just an off day.
Mm-hmm. I think this is the one with the... Does Chloe have a giant sword in this one? Am I remembering that right?
Oh, yeah. It was the big anime sword.
Yeah. Chloe, as Anti-Bug, can summon a lucky charm of her own. And she gets a giant sword to use to kill her enemies. Very direct. And Ladybug also summons her lucky charm, and she gets a bag of marbles. How small, how unassuming, but how is she going to use it? That's what matters. She pulls your basic Leave It to Beaver move of just tripping around the marbles.
Yeah, as soon as it was marbles, I was like, oh, so she's going to trip on him?
Yeah.
Like a funny cartoon character?
Yes, she is a funny cartoon character.
I really liked the shots in this fight scene. It had, like, really good shot composition, like, way better than normal for this show. I was like, huh, you guys did a really good job, yeah?
Yeah, I, in general, like the action in this show. It just feels well, it feels cool, it feels intense. Once they trip Chloe and defeat her, Ladybug has a talk with Chloe about making up with Sabrina. And I was wondering in the scene, man, Ladybug could really utilize this influence she has over Chloe to do a lot of good if she wanted to. Maybe she should have a talk with Chloe about some of the stuff Chloe said in the Kung Fu episode. Hey, Chloe?
Yeah.
I'm Ladybug, your hero. Can you be less racist?
Yeah, like, Chloe, you have to understand that it's important to respect other people's cultures, okay? Like,
yeah, Chloe, God. Be nice to your friends. Also, while I've got you here, I have a list of grievances.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I understand. There is the possibility for good, but also quality of life also comes into play as to how much time I actually want to spend around this energy leech.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If I had a Chloe, I would avoid her. Yeah. Essentially that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, she does eventually in the series kind of throw that sentiment out the window. Chloe gets attention from Ladybug, and I just always kind of wonder why Ladybug doesn't make a more direct effort to be like, hey, you're not nice in day-to-day situations. I get that there could probably be a bit of backlash here, but she handles this well. She directs Chloe back in the direction of being nice to Sabrina again. And the next day in school, Chloe making up with Sabrina takes the form of Chloe continuing to be mean to Sabrina instead of ignoring her. Yeah. This is the best Chloe can do. Is continue her abuse.
It's super weird, because I think she, like, gives her, like, a new pin or something. Uh-huh. But it's sort of framed like, oh, this is so nice of her to do this, while she's insulting her. And then Marinette and Ollie are like, whoa, they're back to normal. And they're like, I guess that they really do love each other in their own weird way. And it's like, no. This is not a good thing to tell children, that having an abusive, emotionally abusive relationship with a friend who manipulates you in order to gain power over you emotionally, that's not a great thing to teach kids. They're like, oh yes, the status quo has returned to normal, therefore all is right with the world. And it's like, it is not, because Sabrina deserves better and Chloe shouldn't be her friend.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Like, Chloe does this, I think, a couple times throughout the series. She'll give people gifts, which, yeah, is a pretty textbook thing.
It's, like, trying to... yeah, dude. Literally, when I had a bully who, like, convinced me that I was, like, one of her best friends, whenever she fucked up, she would just, like, buy me an expensive toy. And it worked, because I was, like, 10.
Yeah. This is a thing. Like, this is something that you can do. Like, you get someone gifts, and you're like, even if you don't say it, you're like putting them in like a social debt to you. You're just like using like trinkets to get back in their good graces.
Because it's like, if you buy someone something nice, then it's like, okay, well, even if, like, it's like, oh, well, even if I was an asshole, like, I bought you all this like stuff, like, why are you being so mean to someone who's giving you like presents all the time?
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
man, I once overheard a conversation between an adult and a child that, was so unpleasant. I tried to do something about it at the time, but ended up being overturned. But, I overheard a conversation once where a kid was talking about how mean his parents were to him, and then after that was talking about an expensive toy he had that his parents had bought for him, and the adult took the really bad take that he shouldn't complain about his parents if his parents are buying expensive things for him. Just, like, maybe the worst thing you can say to a kid who is being abused and being placated after the abuse with expensive gifts. Like, just really bad.
That's like, oh my god, that's fucking awful. Yeah, I, it really just comes down to adults not taking the feelings that children attempt to share with them seriously.
Mm-hmm.
which, I mean, a lot of adults think that kids are stupid or that they don't understand how they're feeling, and it's like, no, well, kids are people. Kids are people who understand how they feel. Even if they don't have a name for those emotions, they know if they feel good or if they feel bad, at the very least.
And yeah.
Usually can draw a line between someone's behavior and how they feel.
Yeah, and, like, I get that, like, what, especially when you're talking about kids in the age group this show takes place in, middle school, that the capacity for introspection is a little limited there. Something that Chloe is doing often in this show, where, like, she's got a lot of expectations placed on her by her parents and is taking out those negative feelings on other vulnerable kids, because obviously she can't punch up at her parents, so she punches down. Mm-hmm. And, like, I understand the emotional confusion there. Like, when you were, like, 13, 14, did you, like, understand why you felt the way you felt?
Oh, absolutely not. Dude, I didn't start understanding how I felt until I was, like, 18.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, okay, all this makes sense now.
Yeah.
I think, like, the only self-awareness that I had in middle school was that I knew that I was somewhat embarrassed to be seen wearing anime merch in public. like, oh, dude. Oh, I just had a war flashback to the outfits that I wore in middle school.
Oh,
I'm so glad we weren't friends back then. You would view me differently.
Well, we'll see about that. I did send you that picture of me when I was 11.
Listen, I had a fedora collection.
Wait, really? Hold on. Wait, for real? I had a couple of fedoras, dude.
Dude.
I got them from Justice.
I thought you would judge me, but it's like looking into a mirror.
It is. I had like a black sequin fedora that I was wore everywhere.
Yeah, I had those like how Hot Topic used to sell like those novelty suspenders and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. And I was 10 when My Little Pony came out, and so I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would wear like My Little Pony merchandise up and like through middle school, which was probably this is like the reason that people don't talk to me now. Like, it left such a huge dent on my social standing that I am still feeling the effects of it to this day.
Oh man, okay. You don't.
Well, now I sell My Little Pony merchandise to adults, so who cares?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking yourself down, but like suspenders, fedora, My Little Pony merch, I bet you were the coolest kid in your middle school. That was like the look.
I don't think there was myself included, there was not a single kid in my middle school I would classify as cool.
Yeah. Oh man, I haven't thought about that in so long, but I was super into fedoras. I had a bunch of different colors and textures of fedoras, and well, this wasn't middle school, this was elementary school, but I went through a period where I had this raincoat that I had gotten from Justice, and it was neon green, and I wore that coat every day in elementary school for a while, regardless of what the weather was like. I wore it even when it was very, very sunny out. And I just didn't take it off. It was, like, my thing.
Dude, what the fuck? We were the same person. I did that with dark sweatshirts. Like, I would just have, like, a sweatshirt every year, basically, that I would wear every single day, even if it was, like, 110 out. And people would be like, why the fuck are you wearing that? It's so weird. I'm like, I don't know. I just wear sweatshirts.
Yeah. I don't know who I am. Maybe this is it.
Dude, I'm pretty sure that we've just uncovered, like, what, like, preteen queer culture is.
Yes, maybe. Maybe. I remember the more people made fun of that jacket, the more I doubled down. The more I was like, I'm going to wear this Dane jacket every... I'm going to sleep in this jacket if you keep making fun of it.
You fools. You've strengthened my resolve.
Yes. That was it. I could talk all day about fashion choices I made when I was 12, but we haven't gotten to the end of the... Oh, we have gotten to the end of the episode.
Oh, yeah, we're still talking about the episode. Let's put this on pause.
Well, this would be the point where we come up with, a question to ask the audience thematically related to the episodes. Yeah. But now I kind of want to ask, what was the worst thing you wore in middle school?
Yeah, tell us what the worst thing you wore in middle school was.
Yeah.
And we'll put it on the show.
We will. We will put it on the show for people to hear. So maybe consider that before you send something
consider
in.
That. You could just straight up, if you want to send us an audio message on Anchor and you don't want us to put it on the show, you could just say in the message, like, don't put this in.
Don't put this in.
We won't.
This is for your ears only. I trust you too.
If you would like a record to go out into the world of the worst outfit that you ever put together as a preteen, by all means, send it to us.
Oh my goodness. I feel like we're doing the Smithsonian's work right now.
Yeah, we're capturing raw evidence of how cringy all 12-year-olds were when we were that age. The next three episodes that we are watching are The Puppeteer, Reflecta, which I'm pretty sure is, like, important and comes up later, and Guitar Villain.
All right, well, I'm excited for those ones.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But until then...
Smash that like button. subscribe, ring the bell.
For more pro gamer updates.
YouTube is a broken website that only lets people see videos if you've clicked like 30,000 things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why we're not on YouTube. That's why we're on Spotify and Anchor and wherever you find your podcast. So, you know, subscribe to our podcast, leave a review, send us a voice message. Ava, we need to get out of here before the gamers come for us. We need to go.
They're on their way. I can hear them breaking through the walls.
Pound it.
Pound it. Oh my god.
Let's go. Run. Run. Go.
God, they're after our G fuel. Oh my god.